Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's great to have your company once again, as it is to have the company of my two great co-hosts, Dave Johnston and Kate Bakos. Dave, how are you?
Really well, thanks, Pete. We've had the flu go through our house.
So you've had COVID and the flu, right?
Well, that seems
you got your
to
money's
be
worth.
The story in Melbourne when you've got three young kids walking in with all sorts of germs from different directions each day of the week. So that's been in our house for the last week and a half.
Kate, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Pete. It's lovely to see you too. We've actually had a cold in our house too, which is no joy, but yeah.
Well, today is, we are recording on the 1st of June, which
it's
is
so
technically
freezing.
The first day of winter.
And is it winter or what? We've had this nasty cold snap with this cold front that's just grabbed all of us. And I'm looking at you two on screen. We're all in hoodies and scarves. Yeah. We look like we're...
The snow skiers are happy because the snow has started to fall in the Alps. So they'd be getting ready to go skiing very soon. Because I think technically the snow season opens the June long weekend, which is actually not that far away.
Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update.
You got a market update for us?
Yeah, I sure do. Look, I said I would share about Australia's interest rate tightening cycles and what's happened to the property market, but we've really dug into the data, Anne-Marie and I, and then discuss with you guys. So we're going to save that for a full episode in a couple of weeks, which is exciting. So what I thought I'd share is we've seen the first signs of potentially the rate of inflation slowing down in the United States. So that's quite promising. That monthly basis showed the core index rose by only 0.3%. That sort of got the share markets excited. We've seen many share markets drop by around 20%, cryptocurrencies even worse. One crypto fund has fallen over. People are starting to tighten their belt. Negative sentiment obviously is flowing around the world. People aren't spending as much. So the personal consumption expenditure price index advanced to 6.3% in April, and it had been 6.6% in March. So hopefully that is the beginning of the end. Now, we're well behind the US inflation cycle, so we're likely to continue increasing for a period of time, but a lot lower as well. So that, you know, it's only the first sign, but I thought it was worth sharing because it's pretty important to broader investment and financial and property markets around the world.
It certainly is. Yeah.
Yeah,
Kate, you got a market update for us?
I do indeed. Mine's a little one, but it's very topical because we know that we've had tightening vacancy rates with our rentals. We've had an increase in rents across the board, and a lot of cities are under quite a bit of stress, unfortunately, with tenants scrambling to try and find, you know, shelter. Anyway, for all of the landlords out there these days in Victoria, we now rename them rental providers. You've really got to think about how you treat your rental increases, because a lot of rental providers, my husband included, like to look after good tenants, which is great. But if you're looking after them and your rent gets so out of sync with reality, and then you're applying an increase, it can be really a harsh burden for them to try and face if you've left it go for too long and then you're hitting them with a substantial increase. So keep an eye on where rents are meant to be. Make a decision as a rental provider, what sort of a discount you're happy to honour a great tenant, and try and be consistent, because if you get out of whack and then you're playing catch up, it can be a real shock to them. That's my little gold nugget. Well, my market update.
Gold gold nugget. Oh, we finished already.
It's a double up. Boom.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Dave and Kate, for those two quick market updates. Don't forget, listeners, next week our whole episode is on market update, and we might be having an interest rate rise to talk about. We may not be having an interest rate rise to talk about, but certainly very interesting times in the property market at the moment. But this week we have another case study.
We love hearing from our listeners and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form.
One of the great things about a case study, it is real life. And maybe if not all of it relates to everyone, we would imagine that some of it relates to most people. If you're really interested in what we're talking about today and really interested in the numbers, check the notes because we'll have all the figures there for you. I know it might be a bit hard to retain everything when you're just listening to something rather than also looking at it. Today we're going to do a deep dive into a particular case study and it'll be interesting to see what the outcome is. I know what I would do, but obviously I'm not these people and I won't let the cat out of the bag yet, so we'll start from the beginning. So Tom and Linda, not their real names to protect the innocent. Tom and Linda are a couple in their late 30s with two children under 4 years old living in one of Australia's major capital cities. They wanted assistance with working through the various pros and cons on how to best achieve their long-term financial and lifestyle goals and what was the right balance for them. So they want some lifestyle and they want to also buy some investment properties. In terms of their next purchase, they weren't sure whether they should start building their investment portfolio or purchase a holiday home, as they're satisfied that they're living in their long-term home. Well, that's great that they're happy with their long-term home, because that's probably the biggest decision, property decision, that most people will make. So that's done. Now it's just a matter of, is their next purchase an investment property or is their next purchase a holiday home? Dave, you want to give us a financial overview of this young family?
Yeah, so these guys had been umming and ahhing about whether to buy a holiday house or an investment property next for probably over a year and since early days into COVID. And they just couldn't make a decision. They'd had a pre-approval in place for a long period of time and just weren't sure which was the best way to go. Both very intelligent people and were ready to take a step, but decided to get a property plan. So, you know, their combined income was around $350,000. Living expenses was around $7,000 or so. And that's because they both work full time. So they had a nanny as well as childcare. These costs, in terms of mapping out the future journey, were likely to reduce significantly in 2 to 4 years when they started going to primary school. Public primary school, local primary school, as a lot of families' costs do recede. But then they would jump up again in another sort of 8 to 10 years, as a lot of families do, when they plan to send their kids to private secondary school. So that was sort of the short and longer term journey that was of cash flow changes that was adding some complexity to their thinking and they'd like modelled out. So their surplus cash flow was about $5,500 per month. So there was a lot of cash flow to put towards an asset, you know, and whether that was a holiday home or investment, obviously there's been a big drive towards buying second homes during COVID. You know, we'll probably see that play out in the census that's going to be coming out soon. And in terms of, you know, the property market cycle that we might be starting to head into, whether a lot of those second homes turn back into investment properties as well and provide, you know, some extra room for tenants to live in and opens up a bit of space in the tenancy market. But that's sort of a tangent.
No, actually, it's interesting you say that, Dave, because exactly the same thing happened after the 2001, 2 and 3 boom. Lots of people were buying holiday homes close to their major capital cities. Boom is over. Oops, we're not feeling so happy and confident anymore. Maybe we can turn it into an investment property. I mean, there's no guarantee that the same thing's going to happen again, but it has happened in the past.
Yeah, I think it's quite probable.
I agree.
Did you want to add anything, Kate, before I keep going?
No. Look, I grew up in a coastal area and there was a direct relationship between consumer confidence and number of sailboards up along the Esplanade.
Yeah.
Very, very, very close correlation. Yeah.
Absolutely.
When we're happy and confident, we want to spend money, whether it's on an extra coffee, meal, holiday or holiday house.
Yeah. All you have to do is just think literally about what would happen if things tightened and you had to start cutting your expenditure as a family. What are the things you'll be really reluctant to let go? It will be kids at private schools. You don't want to dislodge your kids from school. It's the family home, all of the other surplus things that can go, they'll go. When people really feel that things are getting tight, have a think about what will be the first things that get sold.
Yeah, an extra rental income is a fairly handy extra amount.
Certainly is. Keep the asset, get the rental income when things turn good again.
Yes.
Swap it over.
Start using it again.
And aren't we fortunate that, you know, these days Airbnb is definitely an option for people. You know, 20 years ago that wasn't the option. And putting something on the normal rental market or finding a holiday let kind of arrangement, it was less known and less available.
Which might help protect some of the values in the holiday markets more than historically.
I think so, Dave. Yeah, I think that is a saving grace.
Good point. Yeah.
All right, better get back to this case study. So they live in an inner northern suburb of one of the capital cities at property value in excess of about $2.35 million, debt of just under $1.2 million, so principal and interest repayments of around $4,700. Available funds of around $180,000, and they're balanced in terms of their risk profile. So to remind everybody, that's a three. So they're not very conservative or conservative, but they're not aggressive or very aggressive either. So that's a bit of an overview of our case study couple and their family. So if we move into their goals.
So the lifestyle goals, likely improve the family home by adding an additional bathroom. I think that is an excellent idea. Most people these days want two bathrooms and one should be the ensuite. Currently, they only have one bathroom and one powder room. Potential holiday home purchase, or they may decide it's better to keep renting Airbnb when they go on holidays. That's what I would do, but I'm not this couple. The case study is not about me, so we'll keep going. Both want to keep progressing their careers, continuing to have roles that are challenging, interesting and meaningful. Flexibility to cut back on work in the future, like go part-time. Potential to live and work overseas for a period of time. Very good. Flexibility to retire early if they wanted to. That's certainly a goal of many people. Enjoy having surplus income for entertaining, good food, wine, and at least one overseas trip per year. They want the ability to travel and holiday regularly. Dave, you want to talk to us about their property goals?
As I've mentioned, in their next property decision, they wanted to buy a holiday house or an investment property with their long-term goals in mind and were unable to decide which pathway. Given how important property purchase decisions are, they want to ensure they have the right strategy and expert-driven advice to support that decision. And we ask people to map out an example of the pathway that they might think that they'd like to go down in an ideal world, and then we model out different versions of that and look at the financial outcomes. So they said an investment property now for $1 million, then another one in 3 years for $800,000, and then a holiday house 2 years after that for $800,000. So that is quite ambitious and maybe or maybe not achievable, but that was, in an ideal world, that was what they said that they'd like their pathway to be.
Okay. Yeah. How about if we start with the opposite and we look at scenario one where they purchased a holiday home at $800,000?
I've got one little point to make and I love it. I saw it and we skimmed over it and I thought, how clever and insightful. These guys understand that there's a couple of ways that they could take this, and they've accepted that with scenario one that you're about to go down, Pete, the alternative is to keep renting Airbnb for holidays. A lot of people think about having a holiday house and they sometimes get so wound up with the idea they lose sight of the fact that you can still have a holiday house that you don't own. You could forward plan it and have the same place, you know, every summer for the next 20 years if that's what you want to do. I mean, I know people that go and stay at a caravan park, same place, meet the same friends. And it's a really special way to look at this because it gives you options if you're willing to stand back and ask yourself, what's the cost differential? So if I allocate even a whole month, once a year, Airbnb at this holiday hotspot, what does it look like versus owning something and paying the land tax and mowing the lawn, etc.? I just wanted to add in that they had already conceptualised this and a lot of clients don't.
It's a really good point. And as I know you do, Kate, it's something we always talk through with our clients and feed into the property plan as well and work through those numbers. Just before we get into the two scenarios we decided to model, Pete, just a critical part in terms of the financial and money goals. So they want financial security and be able to send their children to private school. And then, you know, the critical piece in terms of the money goals, their current surplus cash flow was $5,500. And they were happy for that to be reduced down to $1,500 per month. We thought it was reasonable for it to be somewhere between $1,500 to $3,000, given their likely end debt and ongoing commitments. And their total available funds of $180,000, they were happy to reduce that down to $70,000 buffer. They were willing to put about $110,000 towards a purchase. They're also hoping, you know, ideal world, retire by 55, an annual rental income of $150,000. That might push back against some of the plans to slow back on employment between now and 55. And so they're the different compromises and balances that we need to consider.
All right, Dave, how about if we start with scenario one, which is the holiday home purchase at $800,000?
Yeah, so we decided to model the holiday home purchase at 800 because obviously that was one of their key considerations. So they could see that this hits their target price for the holiday house. It obviously allows them to enhance their lifestyle today by securing the holiday house now and create long-term memories with their children who are still quite young. They would need to tap into about $98,000 of equity against their house and contributed that full $110,000 of cash. And that would then leave them with a loan of 80%, $640,000 against the holiday house and the extra $98,000 against the existing house. So that's borrowing $738,000 of the $800,000 purchase. And that allows them to achieve, assuming an interest rate at around 3%, that means their money goal is achieved of still having surplus of around $1,500 per month, and also their buffer would be at their goal of $70,000. So it actually landed pretty nice and neatly with that loan structure at the $800,000 scenario.
Dave, I've got a question, and I hope I'm not being too much of a cat among the pigeons. I've noted that the $800 was the amount that they allocated in this scenario for a holiday house, and the forward date looks to be quite into the future. Is that correct? Did they run?
That's their ideal pathway. But one of the key things they were tossing up was whether to get the holiday house today or an investment property, and work through. Okay, well, what are the trade offs financially versus, you know, lifestyle gains?
And how did they approach the feasibility of that price point and that timing?
In terms of saying, look, in our ideal pathway, we'd buy two investment properties and the holiday home. Mm-hmm. It's something we ask people to consider when we ask them about 50 questions before we begin the property planning journey. So they're probably thinking, okay, well, at that point in time, we've knocked out our two investment properties in this ideal world. Then we can get the holiday house. Whether that's actually achievable, though, is another thing.
Yeah, so I was concerned about the price point. These days, $800,000 doesn't go very far with a coastal option.
I believe they had looked at what they would be happy with for an $800,000 purchase. And so I remember where it was. And without, you know, giving away too much detail, it was a regional area where a bit further away from the capital city, where you could purchase a reasonable standalone property for that sort of price point.
And I think that's a really valuable thing for any listeners to be taking on board when you're speaking to an advisor and trying to model out what your options or your intentions are. You've really got to have a look at what it is that you're after broadly and have some example properties. I say this to clients when they get in touch, you know, I'm thinking of getting a holiday house or a future house or whatever. I ask them for five recent examples that have sold in the last 3 months that are representative of what they want and where they want. And that really tells me exactly what sort of price point they need to be prepared for. So when you can do that and have it on hand, it's enormously helpful for your advisor to be able to model it out.
100%. They holidayed pretty regularly in the place that they were looking to consider buying in. And so they were pretty confident that the price point they were at would be able to get them what they wanted. But as we both know, usually people underestimate the actual price point, whether it's a home, whether it's a holiday house, and often they end up paying 10 or even 20% more than what they were first thinking. So,
and if people want a specific idea, that's why I ask them for 5 examples, because then we can rigorously look at all of them.
Yeah, and the great thing about modelling is it provides contrasts. It's not perfect in terms of no one's going to necessarily buy exactly what is modelled at the exact price point. It might be a bit higher, a bit less. Having gone through the modelling, it then helps people make a decision for what actually is achievable, which can end up being higher or lower. And obviously, you can't model every single number because that's just not feasible. It really is about thinking about what's the most appropriate examples to model for the particular clients, because there is a fair bit of financial calculations that go into the modelling. Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Modelling is good, I think, because even at the very basic level, it gets your thoughts down on paper. You don't have to model on an Excel spreadsheet, but just write it down on paper what the numbers look like. And it's almost like telling somebody else, you know, it's almost like getting another opinion because now you're seeing it in black and white. So I would certainly encourage modelling. And once you've done it, not so much on pencil and paper, but if you have done it on an Excel spreadsheet, then you can change the numbers around and look at different scenarios, which is also good. So getting back to this scenario, Dave, what's the outcome of this scenario one, which is buy the holiday home first?
Yeah, so like they can purchase for $800,000, achieve their money goals. They're obviously able to get that investment property, although to Kate's point, they might find they need to stretch beyond $800,000, which would be achievable for them, but they'd need to go lower than what their current comfort zone is. So their $1,500 surplus cash flow might need to reduce, or they might need to tip in more cash to stay at the $1,500. And these are the types of things that, you know, you can play with endlessly, really, to, you know, I guess, spit out different sort of scenarios and examples. But yeah, it shows that they could buy a holiday house. Now, there's a lot of cons around that. It's going to push out their ability to purchase an investment property, which is probably going to mean they're going to need to work for longer. They may not be able to travel overseas. They may not be able to cut back their working hours like they'd hope to in the future. They might not be able to achieve the $150,000 of rental income at retirement and the 55 years of age retirement. So that's a bit of the pros and cons on the holiday house for them to consider in just a nutshell.
And now, I love your other considerations comment, Dave. I'll let you read that out. I thought it was insightful. You can see I'm not pro-holiday house, can't you?
It may be better to budget a generous amount every year for holidays than to purchase a holiday house.
Kate and I are on the same page when it comes to holiday houses. I've implied what I would do, but again, it's not about me. Let's move on to scenario two. So what about if they purchase their two investment properties, Dave, for 1.8 mil?
Yeah, look, what was pleasantly surprising for these guys is they actually could afford to purchase the two investment properties today and stay within their money goals. So we modelled out purchasing two investment properties for the 1.8 million that they said in an ideal world they'd be able to purchase over the next 3 years. And it landed with a surplus cash flow of actually $2,500. So $1,000 better off than the holiday house, which is a really strong illustration for all our listeners of the difference between investing versus, you know, buying a lifestyle.
Instant
property
versus delayed gratification, really.
And then with some smart mortgage strategy, because they have so much equity in their home, we can fully finance the purchase of those two properties, which is what we modelled, and they actually maintain a much larger buffer of $180,000. So they don't even need to put any extra savings towards those investment properties. They're optimising their tax deductions on the investment properties, and they're keeping all their surplus cash flow to offset the remaining debt on their home, and which will enable it to be paid off faster. There's obviously a lot of pros from that pathway. You know, it's obviously much stronger from a money goals, cash flow and available funds perspective. The money's sitting in the offset, so it's compounding the principal reduction on their home loan. It's likely to leave them in a financial position where they feel more comfortable because of these reasons post the purchase through the accessing of equity in their home. And probably importantly, from a diversification perspective, you know, managing property cycles and obviously it can reduce land tax as well. They could own three properties across three different states as well, whereas with the holiday house, obviously they wanted it near where they currently live, which would be two properties in the same state.
The other thing I notice, Dave, is, and maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but one of the disadvantages is it's going to hinder their lifestyle. But it doesn't mean you can't go on holidays. You go somewhere else. Like Kate was saying before, rent somewhere, get an Airbnb, go somewhere in your own state, interstate, or as they want to anyway, go overseas. So again, well, you know, I'm implying what I would do, but I think many people that are serious investors, I would know what they would prefer to do.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They've got, in this scenario, an extra $12,000 per annum that they can put towards.
You could buy a secondhand van for that, you know, a caravan.
Yeah. That cash flow and living expenses would already be factoring in investing on holidays. So they've now got another $12,000 they could spend on their holidays on top of what they're already spending and, you know, have some really great holidays as well as owning both the investment properties.
It's getting compelling, isn't it?
It is.
Is it too early to get to the punchline?
Look, I think it's a really good example of laying things out in black and white on paper and allowing people to digest and discuss, consider it between themselves. And sometimes a picture just becomes so compelling and clear, as it has in this case, that they made the decision to buy an investment property as we expected and actually suggested, look, let's buy one first. And then, you know, when you're, it's right to buy that second one, but we just wanted to show them how achievable it was. You know, so when you feel comfortable to buy that second one, let's take that step. And that's usually the conversation we have with most people, unless they're in a really strong financial position. Within 6 weeks going through the property plan with them, they'd been introduced to one of our favourite buyer's agents around the country, and they'd purchased a property for around $1 million. We had a lot of conversation as to whether they stretch to 1.2 or keep it around 1 million in terms of the quality of the asset they'd purchased. And they ended up buying for around 975, which was all right on 975, which is where they felt comfortable. And obviously that's a first step towards them achieving their $150,000 in rent at retirement. And obviously it takes them closer to being able to retire at 55 than if they had have purchased the holiday house.
Well, I'm very happy to hear what they chose to do because, again, Kate gave a classic line before, toys come second.
Yeah, that's, you know, my that golden rule.
Maybe that was going to be your gold nugget. That's fantastic.
And I think this last 2 years has really challenged that, and I know that we'll have listeners saying Kate's being really unfair about holiday houses because they have performed of late. And I'll grant anyone that because we've had outperformance in coastal and inland regions around the country. And in Victoria, as a case in point, our regions have outperformed our capitals. And a lot of people could say, well, you know, if I'd bought that holiday house that you told me not to buy 3 years ago, I'd be in a great financial position. But you need to look at long-term growth, all of the drivers, the potential for market volatility, the ease of getting a long-term tenant, the hassle that you might have to go through if you choose to have short-term rentals, then you've got to furnish the property as well, organise laundry and breakfast provisions and cleaners. it's not that easy, and it's a decision that you need to make with your eyes wide open. But I think long term, when we look at the history of these holiday hotspots and the volatility that they can experience and the pain that some people have felt, you've got to take all of it on board. So I don't want to be negative about holiday houses, but they are toys. If you're using it for yourself and you're not getting tax deductions and you're not running it as a going concern, then it's a toy.
Dead right. And for those people that have been listening in, you think, oh my God, you know, I don't earn hundreds of thousands a year and want to buy investment property that's worth almost $2 million. It's all relative. Like, you can scale it right down. If I give you a personal example, and again, bringing in Kate's toys come second. Often my kids have asked me, Dad, should I get a car first or maybe save up for a deposit? Now, being the dad I am, I would say save up for a home deposit, just to give you an example. So let's say you got $15,000 saved. $15,000 will get you a reasonable secondhand car for your first car. Or now that Labor Party's in and they're bringing in a shared equity scheme and one of those components is 2% deposit, that $15,000 will be almost enough for a, including stamp duty, to buy a $500,000 property. So if you bought that $500,000 property and it only went up by 3% a year, which is well below average, but let's just say 3% a year, in 3 years, you've got an extra $50,000 equity. So why don't we delay our gratification for 3 years, and in 3 years' time, you can afford to buy a $50,000 car, whereas today, you could only afford to buy a $15,000 car, and then that takes you back to square one, because then you have to save up again to get a home deposit. So well, again, this is just
you get
all
the $15,000 car, and then you use the residual equity, and you get yourself another property.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, look, there's a lot of lessons to be learned there. That's why we love to do case studies. Like I said, not everyone earns that money. Maybe not everyone earns in that lives in that capital city or wants to buy that number of investment properties. But there are always lessons to be learnt from these case studies, which is one of the reasons I love using them at uni. You know, it's much better to use case studies than to use some text out of the textbook, because case studies are real life.
So true.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to add before we get into our gold nuggets, Kate and Dave?
No, I think it's a really good point, Pete. You can scale it down, you know, proportionately if your income at this stage of life is lower, but, you know, your debt's lower, your next investment property is a lower value, but the same fundamentals apply. It's accessing equity. It's working out what your surplus cash flow and buffer will be, what you'd like it to be after your purchase, and then figuring out what number works for you, and then targeting the best asset in the best location in your price range. Those fundamentals apply to everybody. You know, the people who are the most successful at anything do the fundamentals the best.
Yeah.
Learn the fundamentals and you'll be right as rain.
Yeah, agreed. Very good. All right, please don't go away, listeners. We've got our gold nuggets from Kate and Dave.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
My gold nugget is all about these fantastic case studies that Dave's been introducing. And now listeners might remember that the last one was also about a holiday house conundrum, but they're quite different stories. The last couple were a bit older and they were prepared to denote the property that they're buying as a holiday house as a future home. Whereas these guys weighed up the pros and cons and decided that they would put their delayed gratification on the table and purchase the investment property. My point is, each couple had to work out what their sacrifice was. When you're contemplating a holiday house, it comes with sacrifice. If this couple had bought the holiday house, their cash flows and their future wealth projections would have been diminished compared to being more aggressive and focusing on getting the investment properties first. The other couple, their sacrifice was essentially making a decision that they would be happy with into the future and then swapping out of their existing family home into the other home. And the risk that you take on with something like that is your forward planning. And so if things change or if you decide you don't like it, you might have stamp duty and agent's fees to have to contemplate and then you're re-entering the market. My point is, holiday houses come with sacrifice.
They certainly do. Excellent. Dave, your gold nugget?
Look, my gold nugget is that's a really good example, these case studies, of the benefit of forward planning and actually looking at different scenarios and how they might play out for you financially across years and decades through to retirement, and actually cross-referencing and comparing. And we're only comparing the next purchase in the actual episodes, but you can do that, you know, across multiple properties right through to retirement. And getting that information, just like this example, can allow you to make decisions with a level of clarity and understanding that is not available to most people.
Well, another great episode. We love those case studies, and we also love market updates, which is what we've got next week. So please stay tuned, listeners, for next week. It'll be also interesting to see if interest rates go up again in the month of June.
That's our tip.
No, you go first because you're the finance expert, and then I'll just say what you say.
I say yes by 0.25%, but it could be by 40 basis points.
I reckon I'm the Pollyanna.
As much as 40.
Oh,
right.
Dave, I'm the Pollyanna in the group. I've consistently said no, and I got it wrong last time. But what I do think is that it was obviously a burning decision, and they had to call it last time, even in the face of a federal election looming. I don't think that that was considered an optional decision. I think it was compelling for them. So I'm going to reluctantly go with 0.25 again.
Yeah, I'll say they'll go up by 0.25. We will see. We will find out next week. All right, thanks again, listeners, and we look forward to having your company again in a week's time. Bye for now.
See you later, guys.
Hi there. It's Anne-Marie from Property Planning Australia here. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the topics discussed, take a listen to episodes number 5, The Lifestyle versus Investment Conundrum. Episode 27, How Many Properties Do You Need to Retire Wealthy? Episode 81, Holiday Houses, Delirium or Dream? Episode 92, Property Planning and Your Next Purchase, Critical Considerations and Why Modelling Financial Outcomes is Vital to Success. And episode 151, Property Planning Case Study Number 2. Can we have it all? Purchase a part-time investment Airbnb, doubling as a holiday home, and could become our downsizing home, all without compromising our lifestyle despite our low cash flow, and still strive to achieve our rental income goals for retirement.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bakos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast, and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist, and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.